Welcome to OC Housing Connection Program, Orange County's number one trusted resource for all your real estate and home mortgage news. Here are your hosts, Hamid and Faye Hamadachi.
Hello, everyone. We hope you had a fun and relaxing weekend. Let's get started today by talking about reverse mortgages. I'm here today with, in absence of Faye, my co-host, with Paul, our sound engineer.
I got to do double duty today?
Sort of. While Faye is away. She'll be back next week.
Okay.
Let's start a little bit about...
It wasn't anything I said or anything.
No. She's visiting family, friend. Her mom actually is having a surgery.
Oh, well, we'll send good thoughts her way
here. Thank you. Let's talk about real estate first. The market, as usual, you know, I've been saying this so many times, I sound like it's a broken record. We just don't have enough inventory out there. And there is a good demand out there. The interest rates are very good. They've actually been... since December, they've been very good. Even though the Federal Reserve increased the short-term interest rates, the long-term did not change and, in fact, got better. So it's a good time to buy a home. The problem is there isn't enough homes out there for the buyers.
What? If it's not one thing, it's another here.
Well, that's what it seems like. Now, hopefully this summer, we start getting more and more properties, you know, coming online. Another issue, I guess, it's affordability, too. We still have a problem with Orange County affordability. You know, the average home still, I mean, the median price for homes are still $750,000, which is pretty steep for Orange County.
Yeah.
But it's there, and, you know, unfortunately, Southern California, specifically West LA and Orange County, are having this affordability problem.
Is it any easier in other parts of California? Or are we just catching up to San Jose?
I think so. Yeah. See,
West
employment
LA.
And number of jobs being available, it's actually the driving factor. Of course, when you look at it, Orange County and West LA, they have plenty of companies, plenty of employment, and people want to live close by their jobs. But when you go out to Riverside, San Bernardino, then you see more homes that are affordable. But at the same time, you got to put in the couple of hours of driving time coming to work or going back to work.
Exactly.
So it's a trade-off. You can get a nicer home, bigger home when you go out to, say, Riverside areas or San Bernardino. But then you got to put up with the traffic in the morning.
Will they ever generate jobs out there so it's not coming into Orange County? That's what the hope has been for so long, but it seems to be just warehouses and stuff they're building out there.
Yeah. I hope so. I mean, you're right. It's warehouses because the land is cheaper.
Right.
You know, but hopefully at some... See, the problem, it's almost like a catch-22. You want to put your company in a location where you have good, qualified, skilled people.
Yes.
Now, Orange County is perfect for that. You got a good population of educated white-collar people. You got good blue-collar, you know, good number of people who are working in, you know, factories and will be classified as blue-collar. So you want to put your company close by them. Now, at the same time, you want to go to some, I mean, those people, they can't afford to live in Orange County anymore because there's more and more people wanting to live here and the demand is higher.
Exactly. And can I give just a silly example of what you're talking about? But I think it's points out the problem. Before I did all this, went through a phase where I built some bars, and we were trying to build real upscale bars and restaurants, a group of us. And
that's
we built
like,
one of
them. Sounds like fun.
It was. It was called Kelly McHugh's, and we built a couple of them out there. Irish pub with, you know, kind of fun food and games and pool tables and whatnot. It's like a sports bar dressed up as an Irish pub. And we were at the time, this is 10, 15 years ago, we were trying to sell very upscale beers and very upscale product and just to make it a fun place, but it wasn't just a neighborhood hangout. So we built one in Mission Viejo, very successful. Tried to build one out in San Bernardino, not very successful. And one of the problems we had in the market, even though this was at that time in downtown San Bernardino, there are lots of courts, there's county, state, and federal courts there, lots of judges, lots of the people we thought would love to hang out after work, and we couldn't get good staff out there. The staff experience in San Bernardino was mostly working in fast food restaurants. There weren't at that time a lot of nice dining places. So the people who were coming in didn't know how to work in that environment. And we had to train them harder and it didn't work. Whereas in Mission Viejo, we put on an ad. There were lots of people who worked at bars in Huntington Beach or Newport Beach or whatever. They knew what we were trying to do. They knew the kind of quality and service that we were trying to get across. And you wouldn't think that would matter, but it did. And one succeeded, and one failed.
Exactly what we're talking about. You want to put a business close to where you can find employees easier. So Orange County, of course, has got a good segment of blue collar, white collar, educated, you know, everybody here. Whereas when you go to Riverside, you're going to run into the exact same problem that you're mentioning.
Yeah. So I could only imagine if you were trying to extrapolate and trying to find software engineers or other sorts of more sophisticated CAD operators or other sorts of things for your factory. And you think, well, I can train anybody. Well, this is a waitress job. This is about as low as you can go. But they didn't really understand how to sell this product or how to present this product or how to serve that clientele because they had no experience with it themselves. In the same way, I've read that when people first went to China and they would, and to a certain degree, still try and make sophisticated things in China, yes, you've got an eager task, a labor force that will do just about anything you want them to do. But if they don't know what it is that they're making, if they've never seen a heart valve or something exactly sophisticated, they don't. How do they know if they're doing it right?
That's exactly the same problem, you know, the problem that they're looking at. And that's one of the reasons why Orange County is so much in demand. People
right.
want to live close by their jobs, and the people who are hiring want to open up, you know, shop where they're close by their
Yeah, employees. You could get lots of people who are used to high-end engineering or high-end design or high-end anything here in Orange County as another area. So it becomes a catch-22.
Exactly. Yeah. So whether it's going to be more people wanting to move out there, we have to see how many industries move out there. Sometimes local governments make a big difference when they come out and actually make incentives for various industries to move there.
Right.
And that could help, actually.
I know back in our own Detroit, where I grew up, and you had a brief period of time that you lived in that rough area there, outside, you know, University of Michigan, outside of Detroit there. I know that's always been a problem because they've got so many generations of poor people who have lived on welfare that it's hard. They don't understand even the idea of getting up and having to be at a job every week. I know this sounds hard. I'm not trying to pick on any group or whatever, but you've got people who have been unemployed habitually for generations. It's hard. And they say, well, gee, we'll give them tax breaks for companies to come here. We've got this eager labor force here. Yeah, but you have to teach them the ways
exactly,
of work,
yeah.
And you have to teach them how they don't have any skills.
That's very true. In fact, I believe the local government, our state government, is offering training for various industries.
In Michigan or in Detroit? No, in California.
Yeah. If you get laid off, it is possible to start going to college or community college, and the government actually subsidizes it.
And I think that's been one of the interesting debates that people haven't had in this country. There are parts of this country, like Detroit or other places, the Rust Belt, where there's still a lot of people unemployed. Their jobs went somewhere else, and they ain't coming back. I'm thinking mostly the industrial Rust Belt,
yeah,
the manufacturing jobs. And so you say to yourself, well, why don't they just get in a car and move? Come to the Dakotas where the oil industry was booming, or come to California, or come some other place. It ain't that easy, because not just because you got roots there and you got family there and it's hard to just pick up and move. They have no skill. They know what to do,
exactly.
How to do one thing. They knew how to operate in a car plant, how to make something. That doesn't mean they know how to do this.
They've been doing it for 30 years or 25 years.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Very difficult. I understand. I think Michigan actually needs to encourage another industry to move in there.
You would think they'd find something that would take advantage of that engineering talent and what the manufacturing capability, but so far they haven't been able to find that.
It could be the weather. I don't know.
That's a big part of it, too. Yeah. Nobody wants to go there. But yeah. People were moving to the Dakotas. The weather was terrible there, but there were jobs booming when they were fracking and finding oil up there and everything.
That's very true. Yeah. So I guess if the pay is right, people will move.
People will follow.
Well, anyway, that was, you know, what we were saying about real estate. Still expensive. It's still kind of unaffordable in Orange County, but the demand is there. People are looking, and we just don't have enough homes.
So much the demand that we're upside down. If you want to sell a house, in a certain price. What's the biggest demand for the low end, the middle end, or the
actually,
high end?
The anywhere from 500,000, which I don't know if you can find the house now,
right.
up to 850 or so, it's the hottest.
That's hot.
See, once your loan goes above 417, which is conventional,
right.
or the 625 for the FHA loans, it gets more tough to get another jumbo. It's not as easy as getting it. So
right.
you really have to have a good credit score. You have to have a good down payment.
Because you're dealing with individual investors. Or
exactly.
Who
you're
are
dealing with a bank which has set their own guidelines, and they've been very conservative since 2008.
Right.
So that's where the difficulty comes. Once you go above those numbers, it's not as easy to get. It is easy. You can still get it. I'm not saying it's not available, but it's not as easy.
But we're not back to the days. I remember when I sold my condo in about 2000, and we literally had, before it even hit the market, we did the preview, that caravan, and we had three or four offers. And it was like a $200,000 condo or something.
It's still not there unless it's a specific area and it's priced well. Hmm. Part of the problem I've seen is many homeowners, because they know there's a demand out there, they list their homes about $20,000 to $30,000 above what it's actually worth, and it sits on the market. Hmm. That's not a good thing to do. I remember the same thing you're saying, Paul. I remember I listed the home back in 2007, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Within the first day, I had six offers that were like $20,000, $30,000 above what I had listed.
Yeah,
I had listed it the highest in that neighborhood, thinking, well, this is good. So, no, we're not there yet, and you don't want to be there.
Right.
That's not a good market from the buyer's perspective, from the agent who's handling the, you know.
I remember when they would build the last of the new developments, because we were buying a house then out of that, and there was in Mission Viejo at that time a new development that was just going up. And so we're selling a house for a condo for $200,000, and I think we're buying a house for $350,000 or something like that, or whatever it was. And people were camping out. They were literally camping out and trying lottery to get the chance to win.
I know. Where I'm living now in Turtle Rock, it's about 30 years old now. But I remember when it was actually being built, they had to have lottery. And the first couple of hours, it wasn't more than 2 hours when the homes were sold, and there was nothing available anymore.
Yeah, right. Amazing.
So it used to be like that. I remember in 85, 86, it was like that. They were building homes in Irvine, and people had camped out and trying to get it.
And you don't think that if somebody, some young couple, somehow could scrape together and buy a $500,000 starter house in Orange County, or a condo for $400,000 or whatever, four or five or whatever their condos go for, they're not going to get burned? They're not going to buy that $500,000 condo, and in 10 years, it's going to be, there's going to be another dip, and the condo's worth $300,000 or $400,000
well,
again here? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but that...
I don't think so. I mean, the economy always changes. The market always goes up and down. But it's, you always have to live in a place.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, when you buy a home, it's very, very important to make sure you can afford it.
Yes.
You should never buy a home thinking, well, I'm going to struggle for the first couple of years, and hopefully in 2 years I can sell it, make money, or maybe I get a better job and can afford it.
Right.
Keep in mind, you have to live somewhere, whether you're renting or buying. So I would actually buy a home that I can afford.
And what's an average payment today? What are the interest rates at 3 or 4%? So how much would you expect for a $400,000 house, or let's say?
About $2,000, including taxes and everything, for $400,000 loan amounts.
Yeah.
You're talking about $2,000 plus or minus a few hundred, you know, depending on the interest rates, including taxes, insurance, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a young couple can actually afford that. That's not...
So 2,000 seems reasonable,
Now, the problem is $400,000 homes, what area of Orange County you're talking about?
Right.
In Irvine, you would probably end up with a very, very small one-bedroom.
Well, I know they're building these little, like I was looking up in Santa Ana near the downtown district. They're kind of reviving. They're doing some condos that are about $450,000 or something in there. They're like small. They're one-bedrooms
right.
or something.
Now,
or whatever.
Well, one of the drawbacks, Paul, is school districts makes a big difference.
Yes.
I mean, Santa
Ana. And you never think of that when you're 25
right.
or something.
But it's important, because when you want to sell your home, the people who are looking at your home maybe won't, you know, that could be. And I give you a very good example. Irvine has a very good school district.
Mm-hmm.
One part of Irvine, which we call West Irvine, I guess, that's on west of Culver towards mm-hmm. Tustin Ranch. The school districts is actually Tustin and school, Tustin School District.
Mm. City of Irvine, but Tustin School
exactly.
District, right.
And the homes are a little bit cheaper. Mm-hmm. Many people want to buy on the other side of Culver because then their kids can go to Irvine School District.
Oh, and Irvine's just an outstanding school district.
And in that school system, I think in Tustin, parts of it is actually close to Santa Ana, so you get a lot of different people there, and I guess some people don't want to, you know, don't like that.
When I bought our house we actually live, it's sort of a no man's land between Rancho Santa Margarita and Ladera called Las Flores, and still an incorporated
area, yeah,
right in there. And they were building, this was around 2000, and we were looking at a house, an older house in Lake Forest. And Lake Forest, you got more. It was more of everything. And I was tempted to go that way. And the agent said, well, we didn't have children at the time, and said, you know, school districts just don't compare. The one in Rancho, they were building a brand new high school there, state-of-the-art high school right down the street. Our kid, we were looking to that time to adopt a daughter, and which we subsequently did. And I'm so glad we took the smaller house
and went, I agree.
And that has held up better. Even though it's a smaller house, it's done better in terms of appreciation because of the school district.
I agree with you 100%. If you look at Orange County, specifically South Orange County, Irvine, mm-hmm. the demographics are very similar, Paul.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But Irvine per square foot is more expensive, mainly because the school system is so well known for being such a good district,
right.
And so on.
And the other thing that factored into it was safety.
Safety and crime.
Safety and crime. Our area is very low. Mission Viejo scores very high, and Irvine does.
Exactly.
Those tend to be some areas that people pay more to be in those areas.
Exactly. That's what people, you know, are looking for. That's when we talk about 450 in Santa Ana.
Right.
Some people don't want to go there, just mainly because of school districts.
Right.
And it's important to them. But
now, is that going to change? I know we're going to lead into today's topic about millennials. Millennials mix the whole thing up. They may not have kids.
Well,
they want to be in the hip urban
actually
area.
Changing a little bit. I was just reading today about millennials. And, you know, millennials like to live in urban areas.
Yeah.
You know, cities, West LA,
vibrant,
New York.
Yeah.
There are more things to do. But they've been pushed out to the suburbs now, mainly because they can't afford it anymore. Hmm. And one of the other reasons is because gas prices are cheap. So mm-hmm. they can actually afford to drive out there a little bit more, you know, to buy homes out there.
Right. But do they want to live out there? Some of them are saying, I'm not going to have kids, or I'm certainly going to delay family formation into my 30s. I'm going to get my jobs going, or get my student loans paid off.
Yeah, but one of the reasons they want to move out there now is because we're getting more of what they were getting at urban areas in suburbs. Mm-hmm. The malls, the main street shopping areas where mm-hmm. they can walk around and stuff like that.
Certainly we've seen that in Orange County, the urbanization of Orange County. We now have places like Brea, Fullerton, even funky Santa Ana. There's some parts of that that's really hip and cool, and restaurants and clubs. And
Irvine, the main street, Jamboree and Juan Carmen, mm-hmm. those are the areas that's going to be like a main street. They're going to be building shops and, you know, commercials at the bottom.
Oh,
and,
I didn't know that. Okay.
And you can already see some of it started already.
Mm-hmm. Certainly around the Spectrum, a little
exactly.
further south.
Well, Spectrum is actually a very good example of that. You know, you can mm-hmm. see that a lot of young millennials actually living in Spectrum area, mainly because of that. They can walk easily to shopping centers, movies
everything, restaurants.
Exactly. So it is getting there. And in a way, I think the builders are changing or gearing more towards the customers.
But what happens when the millennials have kids? Don't they still want the picket fence and the backyard and the place for the dog and all that?
They would probably sell those homes and buy another house, I think. I don't know.
Or we'll are they going to change the way people live? For example, when you live in San Francisco, I don't care if you're millennial or you're 60-something, you live in an urbanized apartment kind
exactly.
of
yes.
atmosphere, whether you own it or rent it. You don't have... You learn to live in that apartment kind of dwelling. You don't have a backyard. You don't have a place for the dog.
And you take your kids to the closest park for playing and
right.
stuff like that. Yeah,
and that just seems like that. I cringe at that. You know, when we wanted to have children, we of course had to have a backyard, and we had to be able to walk to school, and we had to have all these classy things. I agree with you.
But you know, sometimes it's facts of life. You know, depending on where you have to live because of your job, then you have to deal with those things. Look at New York. People are renting in New York, and I'm sure they have kids.
Yeah. Oh, lots. And
but, they probably take their kids to Central Park or some close park to their home.
It's a different lifestyle. And I wonder, I mean, as I look ahead, if that's where we're headed in Orange County or if we're going to still be a suburb. I guess we will be for a long time to come because they're not just going to rip down tract homes.
Exactly.
We
want to be suburbs, I think, for at least next 30 years or so.
Right.
But we'll see from there.
But we're going to get more urbanized than
exactly.
we've ever been.
You already see some of the homes being built are already apartment buildings, tall, 10 stories, 8-story buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just telling you.
These ones in San Ana, I was intrigued at just because I know we talk about this kind of stuff in the show, and I've never seen this, which I've seen in other things. These work live situations where they anticipate that you're going to be a freelancer, a self-employed person, and in the back of it, they did this in Ladera as well. They're doing it in Santa Ana, and so you could have your little business on the ground floor,
yes,
and then the
yes,
next two
yes.
floors are where you live.
Exactly. I've seen it. They call them lofts, I think.
Something.
I've seen quite a few in Santa Ana. There's one track in Irvine they're building that, and there's one near the Jamboree and 405. That they built a few lofts like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually very good for a young professional, let's say an architect, an accountant, an insurance agent, somebody who has their own business. They need an office downstairs. They live upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy.
It helps justify so that $400,000
exactly.
or whatever it is, part of that is you're not paying rent on some other office space.
Right. Now, you know, millennials are our largest segment of the market, 83 million of them, according to National Association
wow.
of Realtors.
And well, they're the children of the baby boom, the biggest
exactly,
generation. Yeah,
exactly.
And I have a millennial daughter who's 24, almost 25.
I have two of them, daughter and son.
There you go.
And both of them actually live in urban areas. My daughter lives in Chicago. My son lives in Washington, D.C.
See? And do they have children?
No, they're not even married. And I asked them, do you want to move to Orange County? That doesn't interest them.
See?
They want to live in the urban areas with, I guess things are happening. So,
and why are they delaying family formation? If part of it is
cost, I think.
Part of it is cost.
It's expensive. Most millennials are paying their student debts.
Yes,
that's pretty steep for a lot of them.
Yeah.
Faye, if she was here, she could tell you when she takes an application for many of these younger people, she sees huge student debts.
Yeah.
Attorneys, doctors, engineers.
$100,000,
exactly.
$200,000. Yeah.
That's almost a house payment. So
it
they have to
it used to be.
That.
Used to be a whole house. Yeah, you could buy a whole house for that.
And then the other thing is rents are high too.
Right.
I know my daughter, when she lives in Chicago, it's extremely high, but she likes it and it's very close to where she works. Same with my son.
Mm-hmm.
They both live in urban areas and their rents are very high. It's very difficult to save when you're paying such high rents.
Yeah. But c'est la vie, they're young and they're just living for today.
According to its National Association of Realtors, the main problem with people wanting to buy a home is down payment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what the interest rates are. And so on. It's how much money do I have to put down?
Really? So they're not savers.
That's a drawback.
Yeah.
Trying to get
because of high rent and because they're paying off student loans, not much left to put in the bank.
And sometimes the parents are actually helping them too. So it's difficult for them to help, pay for the down payments. Although a percentage actually get the money from mom and dad and put down.
So here's the $64,000 question. Then we'll go to break. Do they want the same thing, but they're just putting it off, or have their wants changed? We had somebody in from the building industry.
I would say they want the same thing. If you look at the growth in our age, at different age, we want different things.
Yes.
A freshman in college thinks different than a senior.
Clearly.
Same thing with millennials. At some stage, they're actually thinking of forming a family, having kids. And once that happens, they're going to have the same problems that we do. And, so
place
on.
For them to play,
exactly.
place for them to be safe,
exactly.
what's the school look like, all those things that aren't crossing through their heads now.
So it may look different and it may start later, but no, they still want the same things we do.
All right. Well, we want to take a moment and take a break here. So
when
we'll
come
back,
we'll talk about reverse mortgages.
All right. For the other end of the spectrum.
That's a fun thing to do, actually.
Let's face it, not all company challenges are the same, which is why Strategic Market Intelligence can help identify the actionable information you need to be more competitive. Gain a better understanding of your brand, competition, best prospects, or new product opportunities to generate greater revenues in 2015. Call 949-357-9547 or visit www.strategicmarketintelligence.com.
Are you ready to tap into the power of social media to promote your business? It's easy to get social with Turn Up the Volume, the award-winning social media marketing professionals who know how to get results. Drive web traffic, boost sales, get social today. Visit www.turnupthevolume.com. That's turnupthevolume.com.
We're back.
Well, we're back talking about real estate. What I want to do is today, I want to talk about reverse mortgages. It's an interesting product, and it actually helps some of our seniors. You got to be 62 years old to do that. Basically, the way it works is Federal Housing Administration has come up with guidelines, and you can actually tap into the equity of your home. What happens is you actually get a loan for, say, 60% of your home or a number from, you know, so you...
And let's back up one step. Does the house have to be fully paid off?
No, no. Well, there's
or
a loan
just
on
equity
it.
In it.
No, you're going to have equity in it. You're actually getting equity out. You could have a loan on it, but, you know, if you have a loan on it, then your equity is not that much more.
Right.
This product is really perfect for people who have their house either paid off or almost paid off.
Okay.
And this way they can, you know, supplement their income with something that they can get monthly, or they can get a one lump sum.
Does come in a one lump. I thought it always came in dribbles and payments.
You can withdraw up to 60% in the first year, unless you need to pay off a mortgage or make repairs, which you can pull more. You do pay insurance premium at the beginning, which is 0.5% of the value of the 60% of the equity that you're taking out.
Okay. Or and that's insurance for who? For the lender?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that, you know, it's the same as when you buy a home with less than 20%, you have an PMI.
Right.
It's the same type of insurance.
Okay.
Now, you pay 2.5% if you take more than 60% of the equity out of the home. You got to be 62. The maximum payout or principal limit of which you qualify depends on your age. Now, the current interest rate and the appraised value of your home. Up to a maximum of $625,000. So that's the maximum you can take.
I thought there was no limit. So if I had a $1 million home, I can only take $600,000.
$625,000. Because this is an FHA product. This product is guaranteed by federal government. So we have to go by their limitations.
And what are they guaranteeing? I mean, you're going to... They're guaranteeing...
Remember the insurance you're paying?
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Imagine you're getting a loan right now, FHA loan, the one that everybody thinks, oh, it's for people who can't afford it.
Right.
But many people do it. If you get that loan, you have to get an MIP, mortgage insurance premium.
Right. But that ensures that you're going to pay the loan. If you don't,
right.
If you just skip and
it's the same thing, too. You're actually getting a loan. You're actually taking out up to $625,000 out of your home. It's a loan with no payment. It will be due when you pass away, or after you, when your spouse passes away, or after both of you are gone, your heirs sell the home.
But what's the risk to the lender? The lender just has equity. The lender takes over, owns the home, and they're just...
No, they don't own the home. You own the home. They own the loan. And it's due once, you know, like I said, you pass away or you sell the home.
Right.
You have to pay them on. And the interest rates keeps accumulating.
And when you, so I die and my spouse is left and
right.
She wants to, or I just die and my heirs are left. I thought the assumption was they just hand them the house and say, here's the house.
No. Now, what happens is, let's say, you know, you passed away.
Right. So I have a pick. Let's pick a number. I have a $500,000 house or something.
If the heirs want to, they can keep the home and they can refinance the loan and pay the lender off.
Okay.
or they can, you know, they can pay the outstanding debt or 90% of the home appraised value, whichever is less.
Hmm.
So now you can never owe more than what your home is worth.
So if the home goes down, the lender
exactly.
loses, right?
The lender loses.
Right.
That's why I think that insurance is there to make sure.
That's
that,
probably
you
it.
Know,
yeah.
why the, now, you must live in the home. You cannot get this
can't
money
be a rental house
it.
Or something, right?
When you sell the loan, you have to pay the loan off. When your spouse is, when you die, your spouse can live in it until she passes or he passes away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can't take the house
exactly.
away from you, right?
Exactly. Now you. If you leave the home more than 12 months because of some illness or something, then you also have to pay them back or something.
If you go into a nursing home
exactly,
or something.
Exactly. There are ways of, you know, creative ways that some financial planners have used this particular mortgage. Number one, you can actually draw on it on a monthly basis. It's like an annuity.
Yeah.
It supplements your social security or your retirement.
That's what baby boomers, I'm looking ahead and saying, how much is enough? We've all tried to plan and save money, but I didn't know I was going to live to be 100. And what's the cost of everything going to be in 20, 30, 40 years? I'm 60 now. So I don't know that my whatever I've saved today will make it 30 or 40 years. So this is another way to supplement the income. We're all trying to find supplemental
exactly.
income.
Exactly. Now, you can take the money up front on a single payment and lock in the fixed rate if you do. Let's say today's rate is 3% or 4%, whatever. You can, if you take it all in that lump sum, that's your interest rate that you owe them. The money is actually accumulated.
Someday. Right.
Someday.
Right.
And that's
not,
you
not
get.
In your lifetime, though. Unless
right.
you want it
right.
back.
Unless right. you want to sell the home for some reason or you
right.
need to leave the house for more than 12 months. Some borrowers choose this option. And, you know, they can take that money and buy another house with it. Some do that. And let's say you take $625 out of your house right now and you go and invest it into another home and make it a rental. Make that home rental.
Hmm.
So now you have a good cash flow coming.
How does it show up in your taxes? I know we're not doing a tax show here, but this money that's coming.
It's not an income because
okay.
it's a loan. So you don't have to pay tax on it.
Okay.
But you can't.
Whereas if you sold the house, let's say I have this, I'll just pick a number for math. I got a $500,000 house and I own it. I'm a good guy, paid it all, paid my 20 years, 30 year mortgage off, and I'm living in the house. Now I'm 60, 70, whatever, and I need some income. So if I sold that house, I guess I could take, because there's a one-time, I guess in that scenario, I'm under the amount, help me out, or whatever. There's a certain amount that you don't have to pay capital gains
on. Well, $500,000 single, actually $250,000 for single guy, $500,000 for a married couple.
Okay, so I've probably could use that, and that money comes back to me tax-free. But if for some reason I bought it a long time. I bought a $100,000 house, and it's now worth $700,000 or $800,000. I might want to take that as a reverse mortgage.
Exactly.
Yes,
because then you get a lump sum, and you don't have to worry about any payments. You know, you can use that money to live off if you want, or make an investment. Exactly,
and it would come to me tax-free as opposed to
tax-free. And then when you pass away, or you decide to sell that house at some point. Depends on the market. You know, you can actually play the market. Let's say you, your house is worth $600,000. You take the equity out, but in 3 years the house is worth $900,000. Why not sell that home? You already bought another house with the money that you had taken out. So it is possible to be creative and make some money, make good investments. Although originally this was designed to supplement most retirees' income.
Yes,
that's
right.
Why the minimum age is 62.
You're house rich and cash poor.
Poor. Many retirees, unfortunately, are in that situation.
Right.
And just like you say, selling the home, you have to pay capital gain. Now you got to go and rent somewhere or buy another house or what. This way, you actually live in your own house. You have nice cash flow coming to you. And in some cases, you can actually invest the money.
It just means you're not passing that equity on to your kids, you know.
Well,
because you're tapping into
exactly.
it now.
Exactly.
Right?
Now, you're hoping that after 30 years, you know, if you sell at 62, average, you know, living age is probably 85, not 90. Mm-hmm. You have 30 years to live in there, and hopefully by that time that house is appreciated more, so that when your heirs come to sell the home, they can pay off the loan or refinance the loan and, you know, keep
so you're
the
not
house.
Using it all up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, there are some costs on doing this. When okay. you go, you know, just like a regular mortgage, you pay lender's origination fee, third-party services like appraisal fee, mm-hmm. closing cost.
Do you have to do home inspections and stuff here? Does the bank want to know?
No, you already own the home.
But I'm saying whoever's loaning you that money.
They do an appraisal.
Yeah.
They do an appraisal. A home inspection is done, Paul, so that you know what the conditions of the home is,
right.
what's working, what's not working. You already know that. You live there. And the lender doesn't care if, you know, your bathroom upstairs is not working or you have a leaky plumbing somewhere because you've lived with it for so long. Sometimes maybe you take that money that they give you and fix it. So inspection is not done, but appraisal is done, closing costs are done, origination fees. And you can actually pay all of these with the money that you get from the lender.
Mm.
It's not going to be right out of...
So how many points total do you think you're looking at here?
Well, the federal administration says the lenders can charge origination fees equal or greater of 2,500 or 2%
okay.
of your home value up to the first 200,000.
Okay.
So they can't charge you more. Now, if it's more than 200,000, you pay 1% over that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, keep this in mind.
And again, there's a limit of how much you can pull out. If
yes.
you had a $10 million home, you can't pull
625, 10.
625,
exactly.
625, right.
And now, first of all, the cap is at 6,000. So you can't pay more than 6,000 for the cost of getting a loan.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean they have to charge you this. This is up to this point. So you can shop around, actually.
And these are backed by the FHA.
FHA, well, the people
guaranteed.
Who do the loan, they cannot charge you more than this. It's a rule, regulation that you have to follow. So it's not going to be, and this is done to protect you again, because they don't want you to go out there not knowing what you're doing, you know, sign all these paperwork, and you actually lose your house. So FHA
yeah.
is there trying to protect you.
So why do I have this bad taste in my mouth about this whole thing? Why does this sound like a scam to me where you get old people who have a house and granny and just sign this granny. You're going to sign away your house and we'll give you some money and it all sounds good. And then all of a sudden granny.
Well, I think it's mainly because there's not enough information out there. Many people
sounds like
not.
A way to. I know you can't lose your house, but it sounds like it's just. I don't know. There's something about this. Just sounds like there's something there.
There's something. Well, fortunately, because Federal Housing Administration is behind it, because they're setting the rules, the most that you're going to lose is pay that $6,000 cap up front for the cost. If
yeah.
you don't shop around and your lender is a, you know, greedy lender says, "Look,
right.
this is our, you know, fees," and it. Adds up to 6,000, but there are the other rules, regulations are there to protect you.
And there's absolutely no way that Granny gets kicked out of her house, or
no
I get
way.
Kicked
well,
out of my house.
You need to pay the taxes, property tax, and keep up the insurance. The lenders are very, very strict on that. So when you get the money from them, whether you're getting it in a monthly payment or you're getting a lump sum, make sure you have enough to cover the taxes and insurance.
Could you set up like they do impound accounts? Could it be set up so they're going to give me a check for a couple thousand a month or whatever?
I'm sure if it's on a monthly basis, it could be set up, yes.
Yeah.
But if it's a lump sum, then no.
Then it's up to you.
It's up to you. But that's a very, very important factor, because they could actually start, you know, asking for their money back and... I'm not sure if they can do foreclosure or not, but I'm sure they can.
Well, it's the asset that's guaranteeing the loan, so yeah,
yes.
right.
So that's the hot point with the lender, making sure you pay your property tax and your insurance premiums.
Right.
Other than that, they won't kick you out. You can live there as long as you live. Your spouse lives there after
and how,
you.
All right, so granny dies. How long do the children, the heirs, have to settle this up? Does the note come due immediately the next day or 30 days?
No, there's a time period.
Yeah.
Depending on your contract that you signed, I'm not sure about how I'd find out for you how long exactly you have.
Yeah, because you're trying to figure all this out and all of a sudden...
No, it won't be like she passed away today and next day the bank...
Yeah, Simon LaGreedy's at the door. door, knocking on the door for the money here.
There's enough time for you to sell it. Because remember, they give you enough time to refinance it or sell it. That means you must have at least a couple of months, maybe 3 months to do that. You won't be able to refinance immediately.
Yeah, right.
Or sell it immediately.
I'm just looking for that trick that they come in and say, oh, sorry, you didn't do it fast enough. It's ours now here, and you
lose
it.
Well, you got to do it within the specified period, yes. But no, it won't be next day. No, I don't think the federal government is trying to trick you. And that's why they came in and set these rules. Now, it's great that they set these rules, but then they limit you to $625,000. Yes, your home is worth $10 million. You got to pay taxes on the rest of it, et cetera, and so on.
Right.
But the $625,000 is...
And who are these reverse mortgage lenders? They don't seem to be big names I've ever heard of.
No, no. You can go to all the big ones.
I can go to Bank of America and get a reverse loan, maybe?
Bank of America.
Did you guys do it at Eastland, or did you?
We didn't do it at Eastland when we were doing it. Two reasons. Number one, it wasn't. It had just started, and it was only the last couple of years that FHA came in and made these rules and regulations tougher and stricter. Number two, Faye didn't actually believe in it.
She doesn't like it either. That's why we need Faye here. She's something about it. She thinks with me there's something wrong here.
She had a bad taste in her mouth from the 2008 subprime. We never did subprime at Eastland, actually, or Artley. But that was one of the reasons we survived the crash. I remember at one point in our campus, where we were our offices, everybody, maybe out of 9 out of 10 building was mortgages. Everyone is gone except us.
There you
and
go.
That was one of the reasons. We never did any subprime or any Alt-A. And Faye somehow thought that maybe this is the same thing. And she's worried that some scrupulous loan officer may take advantage of it. Now, that is always possible, Paul. But what I advise the consumer, the borrower, to go with an FHA guaranteed reverse mortgage. And yes, you can shop around.
Are there ones that aren't FHA? Can I go
I'm sure there must
Shady be. Loan Incorporated, and they'll do it without the FHA?
I think they are.
Yeah.
I think they are. I haven't actually looked at them. I don't know many, but I would go with an FHA one because they have set rules, guidelines that the lenders must abide by. And from your point of view, simple. Make sure you pay your interest, your taxes, property tax, and make sure you pay your premiums, and the lender is happy.
Well, two different ends of the spectrum. How do the millennials, we talked in the first half, how do the millennials going to get into the market, and what are they going to do with the aging baby boomers to get them out of the market here or get the equity out of their homes, maybe?
So, we come at both ends. The millennials have something to look forward to. Once their home is appreciated enough, they can go and get the reverse.
Now, that loan the granny took out, she can't. I suppose could, well, it's taking money equity out, though.
You can do whatever you want to do with it.
You're saying, but you could refinance it so that I'm going to pay that back, and that becomes the loan on that house. The rest of it's already paid off, and you inherited it from granny.
Exactly. Let's say I get the house from my mom after she passes away, and there's a loan on it. I go and refinance that loan. It may be said, let's imagine it was $625,000, the maximum. I just go and get a new loan on that house. If the house is worth it, the house is worth, say, $1.5 now, or $1.2, I just use it and refinance that house and use it to live in it or rent it as an investment.
So maybe it's a creative way to pass, to tap into the equity to help granny while she's alive and still not suck it all out so that there's something there for the grandchildren.
That's why I think it's actually a good financial vehicle to help the retirees. We all assume now, keep something in mind, the home prices may go down too when she passes away, and yes, you could, but remember there's a limit on that. It's you basically pay off whatever the loan, whatever the sale price is.
Yeah, you can't be upside down.
Exactly. So
that's
the worst case scenario. Basically, you sell the house and you're...
Yeah, the granny took all the money out and took all $600,000 out. The house is only worth $500,000. Then in that case, the lender would lose and you would only have to pay
the insurance that you had paid at the
front. Right.
That would cover the lender.
Right.
Now, I think actually the chance of that happening is... it's a little because...
Depends on the markets,
It depends on the market, and it also depends on how long the granny lives.
Right.
Let's say she only lives 3 more years, and in the next 3 years, the home prices go down. So, yes, once the home is sold, there's nothing left in it.
So I got to ask you the last question here before we leave here. In Europe, they do something even stranger.
In France, they do that.
France, I was reading this somewhere, and you were talking about it coming in.
That's actually like, to me, it looks like Russian roulette.
Yeah.
What happens is you agree to buy a home at a specified price from somebody. And
when they die.
When they die.
Yes.
Now, while they're living there, you have to pay him rent for that home. Mm-hmm. So
you're not living in it, but
no, she lives or he lives in it.
Yes.
Let's say I buy your house for $1 million.
Okay,
at today, whatever your age is.
Right.
I'm
60 or 70.
The price is negotiated today based on the market condition and location of your home.
Mm-hmm.
We imagine I agree to pay you $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
For every month that you live in, then I'm supposed to pay you rent at an agreed price. Again, that depends on what location your house is, how much you would rent for now, and so on.
Right.
And as long as you live there, I'm paying you that rent every month.
And I can't be kicked out. It's my house.
You can't be kicked out. You can actually take the house back if I stop paying rent to you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your protection. Now, let's say I pay first month's rent and you pass away.
Mm-hmm.
I just got a house for 1 month's rent. Or you could live to be 120 years old.
Yes.
And I have to pay. They have that program in France. And
I read somewhere where some guy negotiated that he was going to buy somebody's house, and the person lived like 120
years.
And he died before they did or something.
I actually read that too. I think the best one was the guy actually paid 1 month rent,
mm-hmm.
and the owner just passed away, so he got them home for 1 month's rent. And the worst was somebody lived to be 105 years old.
Mm-hmm. And the poor guy never got possession of the house because he's waiting for this person to die.
He was probably old by himself.
Right.
So that program is out there. It's been in France for a while. That is more like speculation, I think, or gambling. They do that
legal
in Paris a lot.
Yeah.
Paris is an extremely, extremely expensive place to live in, and I think they do that a lot. Rich people actually go and do that.
How crazy is that? All right, so there are places even crazier than our housing markets here.
Well, it looks like that's it for today. Thank you for listening to us. Make sure you check our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat, all under OCHC Radio. If you have any comments or concerns, please email us at ochcradio@gmail.com. And remember, Faye will be back next week with good news and the latest news on mortgages.
Okay. So we'll look forward to that. She'll come back and tell us what we missed about reverse mortgages. She has a different opinion on it than everybody else has. But I agree. I think that's an interesting tool. Let's stick around for our last segment here. What do you got for us? Green Eileen, a tip of the week.
Hey there, Green Eileen with your green tip of the week. If you are looking for a simple solution to reduce your energy bill, what you need to do is start looking at your HVAC system. After all, it's your number one drain on your electricity bill. So if you keep it in tip-top shape, chances are it's not working hard, and chances are it uses a lot less energy consumption. The number one thing you can do, and it's super easy, is to replace the air filter. There is an air filter in an HVAC system, and depending on how much dust and how many pets you have and how much activity you have in your home, that filter may need to be changed as much as once a month. So when you go to your Home Depot, where you go to Lowe's or Ace or True Value, check and see what size filter you have. Buy several of them so you could easily change it throughout the year, or even better, buy a reusable one, so all you have to do is hose it off and then put it back in again. And that would probably reduce your energy, well, not energy bill, but the energy consumption of the HVAC system between 5 and 15%. And of course, that is a direct relation to what your electricity bill is when you get it in the mail. So, and the other benefit of changing your air filter is that it produces better indoor air quality is what I mean. And who wants to be breathing in the dust and things that little creatures leave behind? Not me. So changing your air filter, making sure you have a healthy HVAC system, is your green tip of the week from Green Eileen.